Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the first ever emergency podcast from the Two Mats. Matt D'Ancona, what's going on, man?
Well, I'm glad we're having an emergency podcast because it feels like a very surreal and emergency-packed morning. We were possibly expecting Suella Braverman to be sacked as Home Secretary, but I think it's fair to say I certainly didn't had no intimation that David Cameron, of all people, would be brought back as Foreign Secretary. So there may be more reshuffles moves to come during the day after we've recorded this, but I think that's plenty to be going on with.
And James Cleverly to the Home Office. Yeah.
James Cleverly takes Suella Braverman's position at the Home Office, moving from the Foreign Office. So I suppose the first thing to ask is, why did Sunak have to get rid of Braverman? And as you know, I've said on the pod quite often that I think he has always been, I don't think he particularly likes her, Sunak, but he has been reluctant to sack her because he is beholden to her. She got him the job of Prime Minister by backing him against Johnson in October. And it is undoubtedly the case that some of the more lurid things she said have suited him quite well. You know, he's quite liked having a culture warrior outlier out there. But I think things changed in the last few days. And it's worth just going through them, recapitulating them briefly. I mean, on Thursday, she publishes an article in The Times, which crosses a number of red lines in its attack on the way that the police have been managing the marches. And particularly this was in the run-up to the coincidence of Armistice Day and the fifth weekend of pro-Palestine marches. And in that piece, she said that the police were effectively not operating even-handedly in the way that they managed certain kinds of protests and certain others. And this broke a big rule of how a Home Secretary is supposed to relate to the police, which is operational interference before an event. You know, Home Secretary is allowed to look back on an event and say that should have been better, but before an event, you really are not supposed to do that. And so there was that. Then there was the question of insubordination, which is that quite clearly Number 10 had asked for changes to the article and she had resisted that, and the article went in as she wanted it. And I suppose the final thing and the most important thing was that it was a very divisive article in tone. And while one can't directly blame Suella Braverman for the arrival of Tommy Robinson and his far-right thugs on Saturday and the 92 arrests that followed in the centre of London, it's fair to say she created a permissive environment. And I think it's interesting, you know, this was the fifth weekend we'd had of marches, but it was the first time the far right had turned up in numbers. And on the basis of some hurried WhatsApp messages and phone calls, you know, one thing I have managed to establish is that Sunak was really shaken and furious about this. You know, here suddenly in the middle of London, you know, right on his doorstep, was something that looked like a sort of germinal January the 6th. I mean, you know, it wasn't a January the 6th. Let's not exaggerate. It's really important not to exaggerate. But it, you know, you had far right people, some associated with neo-Nazis, just thugs. This held in prospect a sort of breakdown of public order every weekend in London. And that's not something any government, however weakened, however morally bankrupt, can tolerate.
And I think, you know, you said that it's not a January the 6th. And just for readers to listeners, to make it absolutely crystal clear, we're talking about the insurrection on the Capitol in Washington, D.C. Of course, it's nothing on that scale. But if you look at the trajectory of the way things were going, perhaps let's credit Sunak a little bit with saying, well, this isn't going to get any better. This is going to get worse and worse.
Exactly.
And it could become a January the 6th. You know, if they are defiling the cenotaph, then who knows where these desperados kind of, once they latch onto something, where it will end up. So
it's clear that unusually, these marches, the pro-Palestine marches, are going to become something of a fixture. And they will become even more of a fixture. And if there's a sort of sense of, you know, a dialectic, a conflict every weekend between the far right and the pro-Palestine lobby. So this is a clear and present policing problem. And you don't want someone in the Home Office who is not responding perhaps as she should. I mean, it's interesting that Sunak, after this happened, made a very clear statement saying, you know, he deplored there'd been arrests on the pro-Palestine side, but that he deplored. But he also named the English Defence League, the body which Tommy Robinson has been associated with, twice. And, you know, he was very clear that he was furious about that. Whereas Braverman tweeted out on Sunday a very sort of Trump-esque, very fine people on both sides, Charlottesville type message, which was referred to protesters and counter-protesters, very weak language. And I think that one thing to bear in mind is that, you know, it's something we've sort of campaigned against at the New European, but, you know, for Rishi Sunak, the small boats Rwanda policy is absolutely the heart of his whole, you know, governing strategy. And this week, we think on Wednesday, there's going to be a ruling on whether that can go ahead. And I think he reached the point where he felt that Braverman was actually a liability to that strategy. Now, James Cleverly is a much less sort of theatrical, flamboyant character than Braverman. But maybe, you know, that's what Sunak now wants in at the helm of his counter-illegal immigration.
How much of this do you think is Sunak responding to the immediate aftermath of Braverman's, you know, massive incitements and faux pas, and just the fact that it's bleedingly obvious that she's not up to that job, and versus Sunak looking ahead to this time next year when there'll be a general election and thinking, I've got no chance with people like Suella Braverman on my front bench. I'm going to have to deal with this, with the whatever they throw at me from the back benches. But it would be much better for me to be stood next to somebody who a lot of people, you know, consider to be a statesman rather than just an out of control clown.
As we've said often on the podcast, I think that he has behaved very, his whole management of Braverman has been governed by weakness. You know, he has no affection for her, but he didn't want to sack her because he was fearful of what she'd do from the back benches, and also felt that he was only where he was in number 10 because of her. She's really forced his hand in the last few days. I mean, it would have been impossible to keep her in position, I think, after Saturday. And yes, you're right. I mean, you're now in the kind of slip road towards a general election. Do you want someone like that appearing in party political broadcasts? I mean, I fear on that front the damage has already been done, in the sense that, you know, Labour aren't going to applaud Sunak for his statesmanship in getting rid of Braverman and say, oh, well, forget about that. I mean, she is now embedded in the popular consciousness as one of the faces of the Sunak era, and indeed before the Sunak era. So there's that. And I suppose the question of statesmanship brings us, you know, neatly to the amazingly unexpected return of David Cameron. I mean, just by way of anecdote, the last time I saw David Cameron, I was speaking at a class he was given for New York University, NYU, on politics, and he seemed very sort of content with life, but didn't give the impression of someone who was preparing himself for a return for that. This was last year, 22. Didn't give me the impression of someone who was returning, planning a return to frontline politics, and yet there he was walking up Downing Street this morning. I mean, one of those genuinely amazing moments. And I think it's fascinating because a lot of people have been comparing this to, for example, Alec Douglas Hume, former prime minister, came back into Ted Heath's government as foreign secretary, and William Hague, who'd been leader of the Tory party, came back as Cameron's foreign secretary in 2010. But I actually think this is all about high impact, and in a sense that therefore the closest analogy is Gordon Brown bringing back Peter Mandelson in 2008. Not that Sunak and Cameron had had a kind of feud in the way that Brown and Mandelson had, but this is so unexpected that it will probably knock Braverman off many of the front pages tomorrow, I think.
It raises all sorts of complications. It's not just an obvious win. It gets him over the next few days, I think, better, doesn't it? You know,
strategically, you know, I'm not sure.
Cameron comes with so much baggage.
He does.
To so many people. And he's an incendiary figure in the Tory party. So, you know, far from talking about, you know, going from a period where Sunak can lay out his own agenda, he's now got a guy who, in many policy regards, is his nemesis.
That's 100% true. I mean, you know, they disagree on the environment. They disagree on HS2. Obviously, they disagree on Brexit. They disagree on China. Cameron, much more, friendly towards China than Sunak. They disagree on international development, you know. And Cameron said in his statement accepting the appointment that, you know, he was quite open about the differences they've had. I mean, just one before we leave policy. Well, one thing to note is that Cameron, to an extent that is now forgotten, was always tough on immigration. He didn't necessarily bring the numbers down, but he was always tough on immigration. And long before Braverman said it, he said multiculturalism hadn't worked. So although he was, by Tory standards, a moderniser, there's a lot of very lazy framing of this, I think, already as a swing to the centre. It really isn't. What it is, I think, is something much more sort of basic, which is this front bench, this Tory front bench, this government, totally lacks stature. I mean, they're little people. And Cameron, for all of his divisiveness, for all of the fact that he came up with the idea of the Brexit referendum and then lost it, he's, you know, he had, many people, many New European readers will regard him as a pariah. And so, you know, one can't claim that he's a great unifying figure, but he does have stature. And I mean, it's interesting. You know, this is a person who dealt often, frequently, directly with Vladimir Putin. You know, he was in the running for NATO Secretary General after he left number 10. I was just looking before we started recording at his memoirs and how involved he got in the Middle East towards the end of his premiership, and how frustrated he was. He says, I have to be frank. I'm just reading this off. I have to be frank. In the 6 years I was in Downing Street, we made no progress. If anything, the Middle East peace process went backwards. And interestingly, kind of the way that things repeat themselves and we forget, I completely forgotten this, but he was in his response when Hamas was firing missiles into Israel in 2014 was to essentially be supportive of Israel. And there were big demos in London in 2014, objecting to the government's line, which I'd completely forgotten about.
Prior to that, in 2010, he also described Gaza as an open prison camp. And was very critical. So, I mean, he has got... Again, you know, this comes down to the fact that there is... He is the opposite of a baggage-free candidate. He comes with so much baggage.
Yes, you're right. It would be idle to deny that he comes with baggage. But he also comes with experience. Okay? You know, you are dealing with a government of amateurs, you know, that is heading towards a catastrophe. I mean, I think that's the crucial thing to bear in mind here, is that everything Sunak does, everything the government does now, is aimed towards damage limitation. You know, Cameron, yes, you're right, he has lots of baggage, you know, as does Blair.
Yeah.
You know,
but Blair's not coming in as the new foreign secretary.
No, that's right. But what I'm trying to say is that this is a character who is, for better or for worse, taken seriously in the chanceries of the world. You know, he's a big figure. And I don't know whether that will have any electoral impact at all. I mean, you know, the idea that because Cameron's back in the cabinet, the so-called blue wall of conservative voters will all go, oh, okay, then we'll vote Tory in the next election. I think that's a sort of slightly crass read across.
It's going to be quite an interesting dynamic on PMQs, for instance, because, of course, he won't be there because he's not a member of parliament. You'll still have this front bench with it looks like the lightweights, and people will look at it and think, well, what's the adult in the room saying?
Yes, I mean, I think it'll only work if they send Cameron out a lot on media, which brings its own problems. So, yeah, you're right. In the Commons, it's the first time there's been a member of the House of Lords as Foreign Secretary since Peter Carrington, who left in 1982. So questions in the House will be answered unless they change the personnel by the two Ministers of State, Anne-Marie Trevelyan and Andrew Mitchell. And you're right, it's less than ideal. One of the things I'm fascinated by is what the first cabinet meeting where Michael Gove and David Cameron sit opposite each other, because there is serious bad blood, particularly from Cameron towards Gove.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Gove. Who's going to hate this the most? It's like Gove will hate it. Boris Johnson will be absolutely incandescent about
yes,
this.
Yes, I mean, too. Well,
Suella
I mean,
Braverman will be furious.
Cameron obviously will see it as a kind of revenge, I think, because yet again, Gove has been denied one of the great offices of state. He'd always wanted to be Home Secretary or Foreign Secretary, and yet again he's missed out. I would love to know how much crockery breakage there's been around the Johnson table this morning. A fair amount. So it'll be very interesting to see. I genuinely think this is a very difficult one to call. Desperate times require desperate measures.
So Matt, before we go, two questions which I think are going to become more and more relevant. First one: does this appointment bring a general election any further forward? Is he going to seize the moment? But second one, let's assume that the general election goes the way the polls are still predicting, and there's a Keir Starmer government. Who would be favourite? Would David Cameron run again for leader of the Tory party? Is that possible?
Oh, well, first question, it won't affect the timing at all, because the key to the election timing is economic data. And we're coming up in 9 days to the autumn statement, November the 22nd, delivered by Jeremy Hunt, the Chancellor, in which he'll, I imagine, try and pull at least half a rabbit out the hat to keep people in a good mood, bearing in mind that food inflation, though inflation generally is falling down, food inflation at Christmas is going to be about 10%, which is going to really hurt people's pockets at the worst possible time of year. And I think they'll want to have another budget before they go to the polls to give them a chance, at least to promise some tax cuts, even if they can't deliver them before the election. So I don't think the election timing is affected. On the question of the succession, no, I don't think that there's any chance of Cameron coming back as a leadership contender. Although I think one of the things that will be lurking in the Tory in number 10 subconscious is, as we know, Nigel Farage has just left for Australia to take part in I'm a Celebrity, and I think that although he's not an immediate candidate for the Tory leadership, for the simple reason he's neither a Tory nor a Tory MP, the sort of trajectory that, as we did in a cover piece in the New European a few weeks ago, you know, that leads to him being a serious contender for the leadership, and goodness, God knows, if one goes a few steps down the line, Prime Minister, God help us. There's that way of going about things. And the other way of going about things is saying, how do we assemble a team made up of grown-ups? You know, whatever baggage they have in the past, whatever mistakes they'd have in the past. You know, William Hague, for example, had made, you know, terrible mistakes as leader, but he was quite a good foreign secretary. You know, so I think that there's a semiotics here which it probably won't work, because it's so late in the game. But they're trying to say we're a serious party, and I also suspect that Cameron, having come in at the start in 2010, feels some sort of duty to be in there at the end. If I was thinking inside his head, you know, kind of, I was there when we started. It'll be 14 years ago by then. You know, I owe it to the party to try and minimise the damage and arrange for some sort of smooth exit. That would be my guess.
Okay, right. Well, it's been fascinating, and it's going to be fascinating to see how this
unfolds, really is,
in the next weeks and months. Matt, thank you so much. This has been our first emergency podcast.
Not our last, I suspect. It's going to be a bouncy year.
Not our last. Thank you to our production team, the third Matt Hill at Rethink Audio. And until our regular podcast on Friday morning.
It's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from him. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.